To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel's header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Good morning, everybody. How's it going? Welcome back to another live episode of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min Football family with me, your host, Harry Simeon. And on this episode, we're reflecting on Arsenal's demolition of Chelsea, the Gunners running out 5-0 winners, a five-star performance, you might say. Kai Havertz came back to haunt his former club. It was another big goal for Leandro Trossard, and Ben White's so good that he scores even when he doesn't mean it. It was a delightful evening at Emirates Stadium, one that I have to say at halftime, I felt like might be turning into not a disaster, but a slightly more uncomfortable night than maybe some have predicted. But Arsenal, after the break, were able to regain control of the game, start to create those opportunities that they had at the beginning of the first half. They were breaking the line so brilliantly and so quickly. And I think there was one player in particular that was really, really important in that. And I'm not talking about Martin Odegaard, so we'll get onto that in a bit. So much to break down. Give me your thoughts. Give me your questions in the live chat as well. I'll pick up as many of those as I possibly can throughout the duration of the podcast. But before we do all of that, if I could just ask you, if you're watching us on YouTube, leave a like, subscribe to the video, all of that stuff really, really does help. And if you're listening on your preferred audio platform, please do leave us a review because that helps as well. Let me say a few hellos because there's loads of you in the live chat. A big hello to John Daly, who says, good morning all. I hope you all rewatched yesterday's show. I said in the comments that I wanted revenge for Chelsea's 6-0 victory on Wenger's 1,000th game. We got that. Play that same 11 this Sunday, please, Mikel. We've got Noah. We've got Hacker. We've got AFC Till I Die in the chat. We've got Henry Daniel. Alan joins us from New Zealand. He says it's been a great day. Is it? Oh, yeah, it's nighttime there now, isn't it? Ticking Time Bomb says 1 billion down the drain. They don't score again. That should be the lyric going forward. Peter says his voice is gone after celebrating those Havertz goals yesterday. That was pretty sweet, wasn't it? Watching Kai Havertz have his moment against the club where it didn't really work out for him. He had his moment in the Champions League final, obviously, which is something that people often refer back to. But I just think that the funny thing about the whole Havertz situation, right, is that when we signed him for £65 million, everybody was surprised, first of all, that Arsenal had gone for Kai Havertz, and secondly, by the amount of money that Arsenal were willing to drop on it. There was a lot of frustration, even among some of the Arsenal fans, as to why that was a priority signing and not maybe something else. Then you had Chelsea fans who insisted that Kai Havertz could never be a useful asset to this Arsenal side because they'd watched him for a few years. They knew all about him. We didn't, et cetera, et cetera. And so they just weren't having it. So how sweet was it then for him to score a brace the way he did and essentially take the game away from them and put things, beyond doubt? It was great to see, wasn't it? Apologies if there's a bit of background noise here this morning. I am at 90 Min Towers, but the guys are setting up for the main studio show, which we're going live on at about 11 a.m. And there is some guys doing some work on the outside of the building. And so you might hear a bit of drilling or whatever, but we'll live with it. We'll deal with it. Okay, let's start off with Mikel Arteta's team selection last night. Look, I think we all acknowledged or felt that there was probably going to be a little bit of rotation in a couple of positions. So the left back position is an area that I've talked about loads, an area that we're more than happy to kind of make changes in. And Takahiro Tomiyasu came back into the side yesterday. Perhaps there was a little bit of fear with regards to what maybe Noni Madueke could do on Chelsea's right-hand side. Jakub Kivior's struggled a little bit at times when he's been in those one-on-one situations and he's been isolated or had to go out and engage sort of away from the defensive line. So Tomiyasu came in, which I thought was the right decision in the build-up. And in the midfield, well, I was delighted when the team news came out because that is the midfield that I've been wanting to see all season long. That is the midfield that we've been dreaming of. That is the midfield that I honestly believe if we had throughout the duration of the season, we'd have another 6 points on the board. I really do believe that. Thomas Partey being in the middle of the park, not only does it give us the defensive stability that he's always brought to the team, not necessarily because he's super quick across the ground anymore, but more so because his anticipation is so good, but it also unleashes Declan Rice and allows him to go and roam and drift into different areas without having to worry about maybe babysitting somebody who physically isn't quite at the same level, which is what he has when he has Jorginho next to him. Excellent technician, Jorginho, but he isn't going to cover the ground that Thomas Partey can when fit. And I know he's not quite 100% there yet, but this was another big step for him. It's just a shame that it's coming so late in the season. So I was delighted with the midfield. That is my Arsenal midfield. That's the midfield I've wanted to see all season long. And in attack, Mikel Arteta opted to go with Leandro Trossard on the left. Why not? He's in great form. Bukayo Saka continued on the right and Kai Havertz returned to the centre forward position. I liked the team before the game and I enjoyed the team during the game as well, obviously, given the way it all panned out. Look, I do want to spend a bit of time talking about some individual players. We're going to do Partey. We're going to do Rice. We're going to do Trossard. We're going to do White, Odegaard and Havertz. We're also going to run through the goals and sort of how they came about. And I guess what this victory means, maybe we'll start with that because, look, everybody's buzzing. Everybody's happy. Everybody's delighted. And, you know, we're top of the league now, 3 points clear of Liverpool in second, four of Manchester City, although City do have two games in hand over us. So it is in their control. It is in their hands. But guys, we can only do what we can do. We can only do our job. And as long as we're turning up on a Saturday and a Sunday and sometimes on a Tuesday or Wednesday as well and doing what's required, I beg your pardon, then you can't really ask for much more from this side. Yesterday was a night where you look at Chelsea, you look at the fact that they've been able to go toe-to-toe with some of the big sides without always getting the results, and you thought it was a potential banana skin. And yeah, we took the lead nice and early, but we conceded a few chances in that first period and we were failing post the Trossard goal up until half time to take our own. Even at the start of the second half, we missed a couple as well. And I must say, there was a point where I started to worry about what might unfold over the course of the night. There was a point where I started to feel maybe it isn't our night, but we kept going. We kept plugging away. We kept playing the same way. I will say that Chelsea's style and their decision to try and play on the front foot and some of the gaps that they leave in between that midfield and back line, for example, and some of the spaces they leave in those inside channels where Odegaard likes to operate, where Declan Rice was allowed to roam into last night, that does suit us and it does allow us to play our game. But what the big difference was for me in terms of, you know, what we had on the pitch yesterday in comparison to what we've had over the course of the season was a sort of semi-fit Thomas Partey. We'll talk about the others afterwards because they were all great. But Thomas Partey, for me, is such an outstanding midfielder. And we've just, you know, it's been such a shame, but it's almost like people had forgotten what Thomas Partey can bring to the table because of the ongoing injury problems that he's had. The guy's ability to receive the ball on the half turn, to drop a shoulder at the last minute and shake off the attentions of a midfielder who's trying to press him. The way he's able to spot the positions of Odegaard and Saka in particular nice and early and work it out to them nice and early, sometimes even with one touch. That's the difference. You know, we talked a lot about at the start of the season, you know, Bukayo Saka not being maybe as effective as he was last time out. And we talked a lot about him every time he receives the ball, having a ton of players around him. Yeah, everybody's idea of defending Bukayo Saka and dealing with him is, of course, to put an extra body on him and try and double up. But if you can work the ball out to him early or into Odegaard early and give him time to turn and start charging at the opposition's back line, that makes the world of difference. Those guys need to receive the ball as soon as they find that bit of space. not receive it a second or two later, which allows the opposition to clock onto their new positioning and then obviously shut down those passing lanes, but also get close to those guys as individuals as well. So for me, Partey's presence was massive. And it wasn't just offensively. I thought defensively, he made some really good contributions as well. Some sliding challenges, some good interceptions based on his ability to anticipate what was coming next. I just thought it was a really good game from him. Did he give the ball away a couple of times at the start of the second half? He did. And I remember sort of tweeting something at halftime, which I'll just read out to you to make sure that I'm saying the same thing. Where was it? Hold on a second. Here it is. I said, how we've missed Thomas Partey this season. The way he's able to break lines and get you on the front foot with a first-time pass, a dummy or the drop of a shoulder, and the freedom that gives to Rice to venture further forward is a game-changer. He's been a huge miss. And somebody at half-time or just after half-time when he gave the ball away a couple of times said, have you watched him give away possession three times in the first 5 minutes of the second half? Yeah, he did do that, but then he went on to be almost flawless. And that's what I want to see. And if he can stay fit, and if he's fit enough to play on Sunday, and then the following game, and we can have him for the run-in, that could be the difference. It could be. And, you know, I go back to the wider talking point around what last night's result means for us and the position that we find ourselves in at the moment. Look, if we win all our games and we still lose out on the Premier League title to Manchester City, you're going to be gutted. You're going to be disappointed. You're going to be frustrated. But you're going to have to also, I think, zoom out and assess this for what it is. If, and it is a big if, Arsenal were able to take maximum points from their remaining games, they'd have won 17 out of 18 in 2024 in the league. 17 out of 18 with one dropping of points. That's unbelievable form. So it wouldn't be a reflection of our standards. It'd be more of a reflection of the standards that City have set over the course of this second part of the season if they were able to go on and win the title from here. So, yeah, we need to keep, I think, in mind the context around all of this and the scale of the ask that we are putting to these players and to this manager and expecting them to deliver on. We're asking Mikel Arteta, essentially, to manage a side in the toughest league in world football to 17 victories out of 18 in 2024. That would be some achievement, regardless of whether or not we go and win the Premier League. I've talked Thomas Partey. I want to talk a little bit about Declan Rice and, you know, the role that he played last night. I think Declan Rice quite enjoys playing in that role when he knows that he's got somebody inside of him or deeper than him that he doesn't really need to babysit. And Thomas Partey certainly doesn't require Declan Rice to babysit him. He does benefit from Declan Rice getting back and supporting him in maybe difficult moments and probably against better opposition. But Declan Rice can go forward a lot more knowing that Thomas Partey can cover the areas in which Rice is normally patrolling. And that gives him a sense of freedom and this ability to go on and impact the game in the attacking areas of the pitch. I'm still not convinced, by the way, that that's Declan Rice's best position, but I thought he played really, really well there last night. We got to talk Leandro Trossard because the Belgian stepped up with probably the most important goal of the game. The first one, the one that breaks the deadlock, the one that puts Chelsea up against the ropes, 4 minutes into the game? And I have to say, and it probably came across in my commentary, when Declan Rice was driving forward and he worked it left to Leandro Trossard, I expected Leandro Trossard to drive that back across the 6-yard box. That was what I thought he was going to do. And instead, you know, given he's full of confidence, given he backs his ability to finish, he just tried to catch Petrovic out at that near post. He put plenty of power behind it and he managed to do exactly that. He caught Chelsea cold. He caught the goalkeeper cold and he put Arsenal in front. And that was the most important goal of the night. The first one in a game that you go on to win that comfortably normally is. So, yeah, really, really pleased with him. And, you know, people will say, is it a little bit harsh on Gabriel Martinelli at the minute that he finds himself on the bench? I would argue that Martinelli this season hasn't been as effective as he was last season. And if this is the meritocracy that Mikel Arteta claims it is, if this is, you know, the way things are going to be, i.e. you play well, you train well, you perform well, you deserve to be in the side, then who can have any complaints with regards to Leandro Trossard and how much he's deserving of a place in this starting 11 at the moment? And last night was kind of a really good sort of opportunity for people to maybe zoom out and look at the fact that Mykhailo Mudryk on the one team last night, who was completely anonymous in my opinion, was a player that we were interested in, but we wouldn't go that extra mile for. And Arsenal's ability to be able to pivot at the last minute and bring in a signing that has been more effective and, you know, looks much better value is something that needs to be commended. It really, really is. Leandro Trossard, I've said it for a while, best finisher at Arsenal Football Club, and he's proving that at the moment, week in, week out. We got to talk Ben White, because Ben White, for me, he's just become a cult hero at Arsenal, hasn't he? Like, everything he does, like the way he carries himself, the way he sort of gets involved in sort of some of the housery and the way he doesn't back down. And he was involved in a bit of nonsense with Mark Cucurella before, you know, before the goal that Ben White scored to make it Arsenal 2, Chelsea 0. And he was just, you know, Ben White positions himself there when we are attacking set pieces. And he doesn't take any nonsense from anyone, especially Cucurella, who I thought was at it, by the way, all night from the beginning. He was trying to get under Bukayo Saka's skin. You know, it felt like the referee was on to Cucurella nice and early, which I think is something that you need to do when faced with a player who's behaving like that, because otherwise it just festers and it becomes something more, and that can often lead to flashpoints in a game. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed Ben White's performance. The first goal, really, really composed finish. It was a bit fortunate with the way the ball came to him. It came off Partey and it fell nicely into Ben White's path. But he still had to pick his spot, show some composure, open up his weaker left foot and guide it into the far corner. And at 2-0, you felt like the game was done. You felt like, looking at this Chelsea side whose confidence is shot, who have been incredibly inconsistent all season, who are quite fragile in that sense, you felt like a second goal was all that was needed. Like, normally you say like 2-0 is a dangerous score. It's the most dangerous score in football. That's what people always say, because one goal can completely swing the momentum around. But you never felt that once Arsenal went 2-0 up, that Chelsea had what was required in their locker to even push towards trying to get themselves back in the game. Martin Odegaard was unplayable last night. I would go as far right now as saying that Martin Odegaard is the best creative midfield player in world football. And I know there'll be fans of other clubs that think no way. But the reason I say what I say about Martin Odegaard and the reason I rate him so highly is because it's not just what he does on the ball. It's not just about what he does in possession. It's not just about the blockbuster Kevin De Bruyne style passes. It's about what he gives you in terms of work rate, effort, leadership, constantly instructing people. We've referred to him in the past as Mikel Arteta's mouthpiece on the pitch. That's what he is. But he's also someone who seems to have incredible stamina. I saw him on a number of occasions yesterday in the first half try passes that didn't quite come off. But then there wasn't any standing around looking at your teammate as if to say, why didn't you make the run? Or, you know, waving your arms in the air or putting your hands on your head. It was, right, I've lost it now. Get my head down, sprint and try and win it back. And people talk often about Arsenal's high press, how effective it is. And it is really, really effective. And last night, it was more effective than it probably ever has been. And I've got a stat to back that up somewhere. Here it is. Arsenal recovered possession 15 times in the final third against Chelsea. That's their most in a Premier League match under Mikel Arteta. And he's the driving force of that. Martin Odegaard is the driving force of that. He's the leader. He's the spearhead of it. And so you can sit there and you can talk about the blockbuster passes, the whip on that ball and the weight on it to release Kai Havertz, who then put it into the roof of the net to make it 3-0 to Arsenal and all of that. But off the ball as well, this guy is so, so important. Here are some Martin Odegaard's stats from last night's game. 82 touches, which is the most in the match. 34 final third passes, which again is the most in the match. 14 passes into the opposition's box. 8 chances created, which is the most in a match. 8 duels won, most in the match. 1 possession back 5 times. 3 successful take-ons, which was the most in the match. 3 free kicks won, which was the most in the match. 3 fouls won, most in the match. 2 tackles, 2 shots, 2 big chances created, and 2 assists. Now, if that's not the perfect all-round performance... No, actually, all right, if he scored, then you could say it was the perfect all-round performance. But he isn't far off that, is he? He's outrageously good. Outrageously good. And I'm really, really enjoying him play. Also, just circling back to Declan Rice, I forgot to drop this in when we were talking about him. Declan Rice, Arsenal's, and in quote marks, defensive midfield player, has more Premier League assists than Phil Foden, Bruno Fernandes, and James Maddison this season. Declan Rice, since joining Arsenal, has shown that he's got other strings to his bow. And that's what's been really, really impressive about his rise at Arsenal, in my opinion. We're going to talk Havertz in a minute because I want to spend a bit of time talking about what that meant, watching him wheel away the way he did and how that would have felt for Kai Havertz, given some of the criticism he's had from Chelsea fans as well. Let's quickly touch on this stat from Ben White, though. Ben White, in 33 Premier League appearances, has the same number of goals as Antony on 50 Premier League appearances. One's a winger, one's a right back. And Ben White has more assists. Let that sink in for a minute. Another thing that you need to let sink in is that Martin Odegaard cost approximately £70 million less than Enzo Fernandes. And they look worlds apart in terms of their performance levels. Look, we're going to take a really, really short pause. Don't go anywhere. Keep your comments coming, your questions coming in. I'll turn to those in a minute. We're going to talk Kai Havertz, do your questions, and we'll do a little bit more Arsenal-Chelsea talk as well right after this. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Chronicles of Aguna live, coming to you on this Wednesday morning after Arsenal demolished Chelsea by 5-0 to move 3 points clear at the top of the Premier League. Yes, Liverpool are in action tonight. They take on Everton in the Merseyside derby. Manchester City go to Brighton tomorrow night. Arsenal fans will be watching both of those games, I'm sure, with plenty of interest. Look, we got to talk Kai Havertz because a lot of Arsenal fans stuck up for him from the beginning of the season. And every time he'd miss a chance and every time Arsenal would fail to win a game, everybody would point at Kai Havertz and go, well, look, Mikel Arteta made that signing. It's completely disrupted us. He's playing him in midfield, blah, 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 blah. And we're going to fail to live up to the expectations that we created based on our run last season. No, not true at all. Kai Havertz has 11 Premier League goals this season. And for a player that's played the majority of the season, even still, at centre midfield, that's a really, really good return. I particularly enjoyed last night because, as I said at the top of the podcast, it's as if Chelsea fans are just unable, I guess, to say, you know, maybe it's because at our club it wasn't the right environment for him. And they're so insistent upon this idea of Kai Havertz just being a dud that nobody could even, you know, envisage the possibility of him turning up at Arsenal and being a hit and being a success. And he has been that. We did a podcast the other day where we talked about Arsenal's rotation. We asked the question, does Mikel Arteta rotate enough? And what we established, having kind of worked our way through that conversation, is that there are a few players in this team that are mainstays, regardless of whether you feel or I feel that they need a break or not. There are players that Mikel Arteta values so much, whose contributions he sees as so vital, that he won't rotate them out. And Kai Havertz has become one of those players, whether that be at centre forward or in the left eight position, and with that little bit of extra license to go and join in with the attack. Kai Havertz has become a really important part of this side. Now, at half time, I was frustrated with him because he'd had a couple of really good chances in the first half. There was the moment where he probably, in my opinion, should have had a shot and he decided to try and square it and it ended up getting intercepted, and that was really frustrating. But then I watched the game back this morning, bright and early, and having watched the game back, yes, he isn't the most clinical of finishers, although you wouldn't have thought that if you only watched the second half. But his work rate, his ability to run in behind, his working of the channels, the way he drops deep, all of that stuff is so intelligent and important to our build-up and to the way we're able to get forward. He's key in so many ways. If he was the best finisher in the world, he'd be the best striker on the planet. Now, we know he's not that. So let's just kind of make peace with what Kai Havertz is and appreciate the things that he does bring to the side, because there is a lot. And he is a real confidence player. The pass from Odegaard to release him for Arsenal's third goal was superb. He had the strength to hold off Cucurella, kept his balance and managed to get the shot off and into the roof of the net. It went. And the second goal that Kai Havertz scored was one that showed, I think, that the moment prior to that, where he obviously got his first goal of the night, had just given him this kind of injection and boost of confidence, because he gets that ball there and most players open up their body and try and stroke it into the far corner. And Kai Havertz had the confidence and the awareness there to go, no, you know what? I'm going to use that kind of reverse effect and I'm going to try and drag it in towards the near post. And you watch that goal back and watch his body shape, the way he drags it back towards that near post is fantastic. It catches Petrovic out. It goes in off the post and Arsenal are in dreamland. This guy is so, so important to us. He's been a good signing. He's been an effective signing. And the Chelsea fans that have, as I keep saying, insisted and refused to acknowledge that he can be of use to us, well, I hope you enjoyed that last night when Kai Havertz was wheeling away doing his little celebration, because he would have enjoyed that moment. And yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, I've seen some people online, Chelsea fans mainly, moaning about his decision to celebrate. You couldn't wait to get rid of him. You were throwing parties on social media when it was announced that Arsenal had agreed a fee with Chelsea. And all you've done all season is tell us how bad he is. So now you're upset that he celebrated against you. Come on. You got much bigger problems than that. But it was something poetic and beautiful about Jorginho and Havertz ending the game on the pitch for Arsenal against the Chelsea side that snubbed them, against a Chelsea side that didn't feel they were good enough and have replaced them with a bunch of even bigger duds who cost a hell of a lot more money. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Just a quick run through the goals. The first one, as I mentioned, Trossard, good finish. The second one, really calm and composed from Ben White. The third one, excellent finish from Kai Havertz. The fourth one was pretty good too. And the Ben White fifth goal, well, we all know he didn't mean it. I love that he didn't even try and pretend that he meant it as well. It was obvious. It was written all over his face, wasn't it? And again, a bit like the Trossard goal, in my commentary, I went to say, and he's crossed it and it ended up in the back of the net. But yeah, just fantastic stuff. Look, guys, get your questions, get your thoughts in. Look, we might not win this Premier League title. It's still very much in the balance. There's still a lot to play for. And of course, it's not in our hands, but we're going to give this one hell of a fight. We're going to take it to the end. I'm confident that we're going to keep pushing, keep fighting. And let's just sit back tonight and tomorrow and hope that we get some results that work in our favour. Okay, let's take some of your thoughts and questions before we wrap up. We'll do that right after this. Remember, if you're watching us live on YouTube right now, please do leave a like. Leave a subscribe or subscribe. Don't leave a subscribe, but you subscribe. You know what I mean? If you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review as well. That really, really does help. Okay, let's take this one from Keith Bird, who says, every team needs an outlet, a ball carrier, and a player who puts in a shift. Martin Odegaard does all of that. Is he better than Bergkamp, Pires, and Parler? For me, he's not better than Dennis Bergkamp. I don't think you can sit here and say that Martin Odegaard at this stage in his Arsenal career, having not really achieved anywhere close to what Dennis Bergkamp did, is as good as Dennis Bergkamp, or that his status should be as high as the Dutchman's or even close to it. But he's on his way to becoming an Arsenal hero. There's no doubt about that. He was given the captaincy. And I think a lot of people looked at that at the time and were unsure because he isn't the most vocal. He isn't your stereotypical captain in terms of maybe what we've grown up with and become accustomed to. He isn't the guy that walks around and shakes people up and shouts at people, but he leads by example. And he's clearly very, very intelligent. And when you've got a manager who is always looking to gain even the smallest advantages tactically, and his football is quite complex in its nature, it's important to have someone that understands it, that can then ensure that those principles are carried out on the pitch. And that's what Martin Odegaard is. I think he's going to go on to be better than Ray Parlour, with all due respect to Ray Parlour. And Robert Pires was special as well. So he's got a way to go before he's on par with him. This question comes from Jid, who says, we've generally played well and been competitive in the past two seasons, even with injuries to key players like Jesus, Zinchenko, Partey, etc. Which squad player do I think hasn't pulled their weight? Well, I know he's had a lot of injuries, but when he's been available, has Emile Smith Rowe pulled his weight? Not sure. There's a few players I think that you can put in this bracket, but a lot of them have not really had the opportunity, A, because Mikel Arteta doesn't rotate that much, which we keep discussing, or B, because they've suffered with injury problems of their own. It's a tough one because all of the players that come to my mind when you ask me that question are players that have had injury problems. So is it then fair of me to sit here and say they haven't pulled their weight? I don't know. Mikey says, Kai has a style of finishing that we need to come to understand. It's relaxed, like much of his game. Sometimes it's too bloody relaxed, though, isn't it? What else have we got? There's a few people being negative in the chat. I mean, how can you even feel that way the morning after a result like that? Oh, look, they're not Arsenal fans, of course. Amber Lee on Havertz says, I'm glad he celebrated. Chelsea fans have been treating him like absolute dirt, especially since he left. The guy scored in the UEFA Champions League final for them. Ungrateful lot. I'll tell you what was really petty and bordering on, actually, you know what, not even bordering on, it is pathetic, is the way the Chelsea Twitter account sort of posted about the goals that Kai Havertz scored. So when Trossard scored, they named him. Trossard scores, Arsenal 1, Chelsea 0, whatever. When Ben White scored, they mentioned White. For the two goals that Kai Havertz scored, they just downright refused to mention his name. The first one said, goal to Arsenal, no mention of the score. And the second one said, goal to the Gunners. They just didn't want to use his name. Is it because they thought that they were going to get a pylon of Chelsea supporters in the reply saying, you idiots, you let him go and you've bought us bloody Nicholas Jackson and, Mikhailo Mudryk? I don't know. Maybe that was the thinking behind it, but it comes across as very, very tin pot, I think. Rob says, did VAR actually review Jackson's horror foul on Tomiyasu? If not, would that be serious foul play? Will they review it post-match and potentially give a ban? It was outrageous. That wasn't a red, let alone a yellow card. VAR can't intervene for yellow cards, so they would have had to think it was a red card for them to step in there. I can't believe that it wasn't, to be honest with you. It was a shocking tackle. We're very, very lucky that the player came away from it okay. Look, I guess there's a tiny part of me that thinks maybe Nicholas Jackson needs a bit of a break, but not against us. It was an awful challenge, and I can't believe that the officials didn't do more with that. Tebow says, is Jesus motivated anymore? He tried so many unnecessary things. I mean, the guy came on when the game was done and dusted. So if he tried to be a little bit over elaborate in certain phases of play, I'm all right with that. It's in Jesus's nature. He likes to play that kind of that kind of street football at times. He likes to change directions quickly. And when he's fit and he's sharp and he's able to carry that out, it looks great. The problem is with Gabriel Jesus right now is that we know he's got this ongoing knee issue. And I think that's affected him a little bit. Maybe his confidence is down as a result of not feeling himself. Stilton Avenger says, is there something in the fact that Arteta's big money moves all come from known quantities, Jesus, Inchenko, Rice, Havertz, Trossard, and Jorginho? Is that an aversion to risk or a clue to his next big move? Well, I think Mikel Arteta put up with a really poor squad when he first arrived and understood from the very beginning that it was going to take some time before he'd be able to turn the squad around into something more like what he wanted. But I also think somewhere along the line, somewhere on this journey, he decided that no, now is the time. And this project needs to go bang sooner rather than later. And so, you know, there was a decision taken to try and bring in players that, you know, have been there, done it sort of thing, who have played for clubs in this division, who understand the requirements, if you like, of English football. Yeah, it costs money because you buy players from fellow Premier League clubs. It's going to cost you. Like, there's always going to be that premium added on because the Premier League clubs are the wealthiest clubs in the world, generally speaking. So that's the way it works. But you're right. Like, when he spent big money, it's normally been on someone that he was convinced by and obviously had enough to go by in terms of previous to make that judgment and understand whether or not they'll fit in. Also, character's a big thing for him. And he would have spoken to Kai Havertz and he would have spoken to Declan Rice and he would have spoken to Leandro Trossard. And it's interesting because Havertz was seen as a problem at Chelsea. Trossard was seen as a problem at Brighton towards the end of his Brighton career. Yet Mikel Arteta clearly saw something in them and in their characters that made him feel like, aside from what they bring ability-wise, they're a good fit for this group as well. Selgeus says, where will Timber fit in when he is fit? Would you put him on the bench against Spurs? I don't know. I don't know, to be honest with you. He looked really, really rusty after about 30 minutes the other night. I feel like I would only bring him onto the bench if we were in like an emergency situation. But if you've got, let's say Tomiyasu plays, if you've got Kivior and Zinchenko both on the bench, both left back options, what's the point in rushing Jurrien Timber? I don't think there's any need to rush him. I think that the injury he had was very severe, very serious. It's taken him some time to get back to this point. And I think we just got to be really, really careful and not allow sort of emotion to take over, i.e. not get overexcited by the fact that he played half an hour. He played 45, but he played at a good level for half an hour the other night. And then he dropped off a lot. I was watching the game. He dropped off a lot. And that's understandable and it's to be expected, but you have to manage this journey back very, very carefully. While Takahiro Tomiyasu's fit for the biggest games, I don't think that being without Timber is as big of an issue. The reason why Timber takes it to another level because on the ball, he's much better than Tomiyasu. He's much more comfortable. He's much more likely to help you create from deep. He's much more likely to roam into midfield like Zinchenko does and progress the ball. And you've seen he's got a shot on him as well. But defensively, you know, in terms of the drop-off between Timber and Tomiyasu, I don't think it's that big. Where Tomiyasu lacks a little bit is when we try and use him in the build-up. That's where he's missing something. But he is a good one-on-one defender. And I think sometimes you're going to choose to prioritize that in certain games. Look, guys, I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to wrap up, going to summarize. A wonderful performance, an excellent result, a really, really satisfying night at Emirates Stadium where a number of players got in on the act. Three different goal scorers, Trossard, White and Havertz. 3 points clear at the top. Another 3 points on the top of the table in terms of our lead. Three feels like the magic number after last night, although you could call it a five-star performance. Arsenal were on fire and we're going to continue to talk Arsenal throughout the course of the week. We've got another show coming up tomorrow where we're going to begin our build-up to the North London Derby, which takes place on Sunday. We're going to do some specific player pieces as well over the next few days. So loads and loads to come. Make sure you're subscribed. If you're watching us on YouTube, if you're listening on audio, make sure you're subscribed on whichever platform it is you prefer and make sure your notifications are turned on. Leave a comment below with your thoughts. Like this video because it helps me and I will see you all soon with more. Until the next one, all the best and of course, up the Arsenal. Goodbye.